5 seconds. We have complete clearance for launch. We are go. 20.
9.
Guidance internal. Ignition sequence start.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Howdy, neighbors. May the Lord bless you.
We figured out a long time ago that it's much easier to control people when we're all watching the same TV shows, listening to the same radio stations, going to the same movies, looking at the same billboards, eating the same food, and speaking the same language.
Talking about my life. I can't seem to get that through to you. I'm not just talking about one person. I'm talking about everybody. I'm talking about form. I'm talking about content. I'm talking about interrelationships. I'm talking about God, the devil, hell, heaven. Do you understand? Finally!
All will obey Santa in this new world order. Oh, yeah!
You're gonna have to answer to the Coca-Cola company.
That sounds like a lot of...
There is only one holistic system of systems. One vast and immense multinational dominion of dollars. Multinational dominion
which will produce and control hallucinations to the point that it will change human reality.
PSYOP Radio.
Decoding the psychological warfare machinations within the paranormal and parapolitical landscape. Radio.
Welcome aboard. This is Smiles Lewis.
And Mac White.
And in case you weren't listening, you're listening to PSYOP Radio.
This is PSYOP Radio. Coming to you from the belly of the beast. And I'll tell you what.
It gets beastier and beastier.
Yes. And wow, did we ever have a major news story break here in our area.
In Central Texas area.
At Fort Hood, just an hour's drive up the road from Austin. And, you know, I didn't know it, but I know it now, that Fort Hood is the largest U.S. Army base in the world.
Yeah.
And so when we say this is the belly of the beast, we're not kidding.
No, indeed. And, you know, we've talked about the strange nexus between Texas and Florida in past shows, and the strange connections between mass murder,
the copycat effect,
and the deep politics, parapolitics, and well, gee, we had a massive Ground Zero event here in Central Texas, and it immediately caused another ripple in Florida.
Yeah, that copycat effect. I'll tell you, you can almost set your watch by it. Less than 24 hours later, there was another mass shooting in Orlando.
It's dangerous, dark, and I have been telling folks, or I was telling folks immediately upon hearing of the second event, and I really should have been saying it after the first one. Keep top eye open, folks. Keep your intuition and your senses open to a little subtle cues, because it could save you and your loved ones' lives and the lives of others. Because there's times when the copycat effect is going through the noosphere, the meme sphere, the our collective unconscious, mm-hmm. and it's sad but true that it's almost a science whereby sensationalistic murder-suicide attempts are going to spawn other murder-suicide attempts, and that's seemingly what we saw. Now, whether there's more to it than all that, obviously that's a lot of
you gotta wonder.
Potential speculation that we'll be getting into, and we'd like to hear from you about tonight's show. We're going to be taking calls all night. Of course, thanks to American Freedom Radio, you can give us a call, area code 512-879-3805. That's 512-879-3805. I'm Miles Lewis.
And I'm Mac White.
And we'll be right back.
Every time
come back. All right, it's another live edition of PSYOP Radio from Austin, Texas. And, yeah, as usual, we have a ton of news, and we are going to get into a lot about what you might expect, this whole massive event here in Central Texas with this military copycat shooter and the ripples ever since. But, you know, Mac, we don't get to talk enough, and I'm not even sure what you've been up to this week. How
well,
you been?
I've been doing good. I've been doing the usual thing, working at the drawing board, doing a comic strip.
They give you many breaks from the ball and chain on that project?
Well, I'm taking time away from one project for a week
to
do another. Yes, this is a comic strip for Boing Boing magazine.
Awesome.
The print version.
Oh, my God.
Which
wait, they haven't been printing in
since
years.
The 90s.
Wow.
Yes. Back in the 90s, before Boing Boing became BoingBoing.net, the world-famous blog, it was a print magazine, and I was a regular contributor to it. And with this comic strip starring my character, Jokey, the multi-eyed kid.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, they're going to finally put out Boing Boing print edition number 16 here soon. And they asked me to contribute a Jokey comic strip. And it comes at a time when I've really been wanting to revive the character and expand it and do more fun things with it and so forth.
Well, he ran for president recently, didn't he?
Back in 2004.
Yeah.
Yes, he ran for president. That was the last thing we heard from him. But anyway, that's been fun work. And what have you been up to?
Just the daily grind. Nothing too exciting, Mac. Collecting news stories for this week's edition of PSYOP Radio, which before Thursday's craziness, was shaping up, you know, in a typical way.
Yeah.
You know, there's always news here and there of interest.
There would have been plenty to talk about, but
actually,
wow.
Actually, there is another news article I want to get into later that's in the mind control vein, which, of course, we'll touch upon with the recent shooting news, but which I did send around emails to folks saying, folks, this is earth-shattering, and it relates to an area that we've touched upon a lot, and we'll get into that later. It's a new technology that has a direct relevance to your Dreamograph.
Uh-oh.
Somebody, you might want to look into patent infringement.
Oh, no, but, don't tell me.
Well. It's earth-shattering news, and, well, you know, who knows what the ultimate ramifications of this shooting will be. But, yeah, Thursday was pretty freaky when, well, actually, you know, this whole week I've been really getting into some new sci-fi TV series on television, and, you know, like this new show, Flash Forward. And
I've been watching that.
I've been really digging that. It jives with a lot of my own areas of ideas for research.
Yeah.
And then, but this, of course, the big awaited remake of V, Visitors.
So how is that? I haven't seen
it. It's crap. I mean, I'll watch it. It's science fiction. I'll be entertained. But it's not near as good as these other shows that are out there right now, Fringe and Flash Forward and others. But anyway, you know, here's the show V, which coincidentally has as their logo a bloody, you know, red painted graffiti V.
Where have we seen that before?
V for Vendetta. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was just November 5th, Guy Fawkes Day,
and that's when all this craziness.
That's when all unfolded. Hell broke loose. Yeah.
Yeah,
remember the 5th of November. November.
Yeah.
Well, we'll sure remember this one.
I didn't even realize it until Friday the 6th. It was right in front of me the whole time, obviously, and it didn't even occur to me that, oh my God, this happened on November 5th, Guy Fawkes Day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that significant? I think it certainly could have contributed to the Twilight language that perhaps triggered this individual, whether naturally or unnaturally in the form of mind control.
And it happened along the I-35 corridor. Where
Devil's
so many
highway.
Things have happened. Yes, yeah, some say the highway to heaven, but, well, a good argument could be made for the fact that it's the highway to hell.
Well, if it runs north to heaven, you know, it's also running south to hell.
So many significant events seem to happen along that general corridor. Killeen and Fort Hood are not right on I-35, but they're close enough to be part of that corridor, and it was in Killeen. In 91, I think, that at that time, the worst mass shooting in U.S. history occurred. the Luby's cafeteria shooting.
23 people killed.
Yes. And, that was only surpassed by the Virginia Tech.
Which our shooter, alleged shooter, graduated from or attended.
Eyebrows have been raised about Virginia Tech before, allegations that there is connections to possible MK Ultra type activities.
So this guy, this alleged shooter, committed the worst mass shooting on the United States and the world's largest military base. That's like one or two bing, 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 huge hits.
Yeah.
Surpassing, as you said, the more recent largest mass shooting at Virginia Tech, and where did this happen? But, you know, in the military base next to the then previous.
Yes.
Well, not previous, but the then one-time highest casualty.
Killeen,
incident.
Texas. Now, I wonder about the twilight language of the name Killeen. I mean, you know, lame jokes have been made about that over the past couple of days, but you really, with twilight language, is it? Is that something Lauren Coleman has addressed?
Maybe, I don't think he's addressed that yet, but he's definitely provided a link to some of his coverage of this. And, you know, I was amazed to see so many. You were just tweeting away, Mac. Keeping up on all the crazy developments.
And when Orlando happened, I just stopped all work at the drawing board and just sat there and just followed it continuously while it was breaking.
It reminded me of when you did that with the things unfolding during Katrina. But this, what's amazing is, of course, the mainstream media were using tweets as their main source for a lot of information, and perhaps that's what contributed to the complete flip flop from original reports to the new reports about what happened. I mean, I was talking to people this weekend who were like, you know, relating the story to somebody, and they had all old information. They're like, yeah, there were three shooters, and one was shot and killed, and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, first of all that information is now old news, and it's the opposite.
And you know what? There are so many contradictions. Here's one I just discovered this morning in this morning's Austin American Statesman, a story describing how the partner of this female cop, the civilian officer there at Fort Hood, who has been hailed as the hero, describing how he shot and killed, or not didn't kill, shot this Hassan. Well, it's a story in direct contradiction to the story that still hasn't been changed in any of the news stories I've seen except this one. And this only deals with it in passing. It's just so odd that it would be this way. Let me just quickly quote from that. I've got the paper here, and I've got to dig through this stack to...
Right, so they originally said that there were three shooters, multiple locations where the shootings were occurring. They originally said that that one shooter had been shot and killed, and that the officer who killed him had been shot and killed. And then the exact opposite is now what they're saying, that there was one shooter.
They've got two stories.
Yeah.
They have a very specific story that you can read, and I've got in one of these other stories that I've printed out, of her shooting and her being, you know, shot. But then they have this story. This appears, and this is the only place I've seen this story so far. This is an Austin American Statesman story, Sunday, November 8th, today. I'll just read the few paragraphs here. It says, within minutes of the first shot, thanks to a series of increasingly frantic 911 calls, radio dispatchers alerted Fort Hood's civilian and military police forces about shots fired in the Soldier Processing Center. Civilian officers Kimberly Munley and Mark Todd arrived minutes later. They found the shooter outside, standing about 15 yards away, calmly firing at people as they ran. I yelled at him, this is Todd, her partner, talking. I yelled at him, stop, drop the weapon. And that's when he raised his weapon and fired a couple of shots at me, Todd told CNN. So it's been on CNN. Munley and Todd took cover. The gunman walked behind a building, and the two officers apparently became separated. Todd said he went around the other side of the building and exchanged gunfire with the shooter, who flinched, slid down against a telephone pole, and fell onto his back. The confrontation was over in less than a minute, Todd estimated. I mean, this happened fast. Mm-hmm. By then, Munley was down with gunshot wounds to both legs and a wrist. Todd said he did not know whether his fellow officer had wounded the shooter. Earlier reports had Munley and the gunman wounding each other in an exchange of gunfire, so it just kind of leaves a question mark there in the story.
And, you know, the military, whatever happened here, I mean, we'd like to think that they're going to tell us the truth and what they really find in terms of evidence.
We don't know anything about what happened because this happened on an army base.
It's all they're going to spin it the way they want to spin it. And I could easily see them knowing full well that these two officers exchanged fire with him and choosing the woman to make a hero of.
And you know, to make a big distraction story. But the other thing is the story about her killing it's in one of these other mini stories here. The story about her killing or shooting Hassan, I keep forgetting, he didn't actually die.
Right.
That was the other weird thing. Okay, it's so specific that I'm beginning to wonder, here's an alternative explanation. Maybe they both shot shooters.
Mm-hmm.
But you know,
well, there is this report. This one's from NASDAQ. .com. This was one of the earlier ones. Of course, this was just a second gunman is in custody after shooting at the Army's Fort Hood in Texas, in which at least 7 people were killed. The report comes at about 2 hours after a first suspect was captured. Shortly after gunfire broke out, authorities say the gunmen were dressed in fatigues, though it's not confirmed whether they are military personnel. It's also not known if the victims were military personnel or civilians. But this other one, let's see. Here we go. Surviving Fort Hood shooting suspect arrested at golf course, officer says. This is another CNN source from November 5th. A senior officer who was playing golf Thursday near Fort Hood, Texas, told CNN he witnessed the arrest of one of the two surviving suspects. Again, they still thought this guy, Hassan, was dead, of the shooting at the Army installation. Shortly after the shooting, the officer said military police told him to clear the course, and he saw other MPs surrounding the building that held the golf carts, he said. The senior officer said he ducked into a nearby house for cover as 30 to 40 cars carrying MPs approached. He said he saw a soldier in battle-dressed uniform, his hands in the air. The MPs ordered him to lie on the ground and open his uniform, presumably to ensure he was not carrying explosives, the senior officer said. He said an MP told him that authorities considered the man to be a suspect in the shootings after having overheard the man say he was with the shooter. Of course, he could have just been, mentioned that
I was sitting next to him.
Yeah. The man was surrounded by 25 to 30 minutes until a convoy of vehicles arrived, led by a Ford Crown Victoria and carrying men in suits. And he was taken away, the senior officer said.
And we don't know who he was or where he went. Just, you have to wonder, is it like the tramps there picked up in Dealey Plaza after Kennedy was killed?
It ends by saying this golf course is 2.5 miles.
That's the other thing. Yeah. The golf course. I mean, so the guy went to the golf course. And what was he doing there? And
Easily be a false lead.
Yeah,
but
it easily could be.
It's in this case.
But you have to look at everything in these early reports, and that's the lesson of the JFK assassination and so many others. That so many of these early stories that are first reported at the time and then dismissed as well, there was nothing to that, turn out to be very important, such as shots fired from the grassy knoll or, say, reports of a confirmed report of another bomb found in the Oklahoma City Federal Building. So many strange contradictions with this one.
And interconnections. And, of course, the piece de resistance. Fort Hood shooting, Texas Army killer linked to September 11th terrorists. They had to go there. I mean, again, it's like the world is this weird. Major Nidal Malik Hassan worshipped at a mosque led by a radical imam said to be a spiritual advisor to three of the hijackers who attacked America on September 11th, 2001. This is from telegraph.co.uk, and I believe has been carried in some American papers. Hassan, the sole suspect in the massacre, attended the controversial Dar al-Hijra Mosque in Great Falls, Virginia, that's CIA territory, in 2001 at the same time as two of the September 11th terrorists.
And how many other people, I would have to wonder.
Right.
You know.
His mother's funeral was held there in May that year. The preacher at the time was Anwar al-Awlaki, an American-born Yemeni scholar who was banned from addressing a meeting in London by video link in August because he is accused of supporting attacks on British troops and backing terrorist organizations.
One thing I found troublesome about this story is that this whole thing is based on information obtained from a novelist, a Muslim novelist, who got the information from a man he knows who worshipped at this mosque, whom he will only refer to by the name of Robert.
So it's not exactly well substantiated. It's pretty much hearsay at this point.
So I have to wonder about that
until they produce surveillance security tapes from the church.
Well,
the mosque.
But something else that was said early on.
Also, it blew my mind. He's being held in a military hospital in San Antonio.
Right around here where we live. I mean, it's just all happening
just
right
down
here.
The road.
Belly of the beast, indeed. But you may recall early on, Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison said she had received a confirmed report from Fort Hood that the gunman was going around methodically picking out the people he wanted to kill. Okay, so that was confirmed. And so, apparently, then you hear that there were so many killed, and you hear the reports of firing at people as they were running away. So it looks random. But, if you look at the list of victims, the 13 individuals killed, five of them are mental health professionals.
Possible coworkers?
No comment has been made about that, except in another London Telegraph story.
Somebody happened to notice, hey,
Yeah, but now, so, but all of the U.S. stories that I've read so far talk about how there were all of these engineering soldiers involved with the engineering corps, who were killed, privates and corporals and what have you. And that's true. That's the majority. But they don't say the thing that really stands out, which is that 5 out of 13 were apparently co-workers.
Wow.
Of
Hassan's. I hadn't even noticed that.
But Hassan himself is a weird character.
But the story that they're painting is that of this guy who was perhaps harassed because of his religion, because of his name, and who apparently was speaking out to close colleagues about his doubts about what they were doing, and but not in like a way. Everything I've read, this is the thing that disturbs me the most, but we'll be right back after these messages, and this is PSYOP Radio, and give us a call, 512-879-3805. We'll be right back.
Jesus is tapping your phone calls. He knows everything that you do.
Yeah, he just might start doing it. To stop another shooting.
And clean up your...
Yeah. I was just saying, the thing that gets me the most is the articles that are saying, some predicted trouble from Fort Hood's Major Hassan. One or more of his friends are saying, yeah, he was constantly, saying, things like, let's see, where's a quote there? Basically just questioning some real simple things, wondering, whether it was more a war on Islam than it was against quote-unquote terrorism. In other words, he was thinking for himself. And
apparently a lot of soldiers do. They have this peace house there. We've talked about here on this show before. They're in near Fort Hood, where soldiers go there who are anti-war, and they're, to seek information. How do they deal with their situation?
Yeah. And there are those that are resisting and going AWOL or just, conscientious objecting. And some are serving jail time, and some are out free, you know, protesting and talking and lecturing about the fact that they don't support the war anymore. But the thing that gets me is it's very mild inquisitiveness that seems to be being reported about what this guy was saying and doing. Even these alleged web posts that equate a soldier throwing himself on a grenade with suicide bombers, it's like, you know, this is intellectual exercise stuff. This is not.
You read the actual posting here, and there's nothing particularly inflammatory. They just, here is the one sentence that they is highlighted here. And in the context, I can't read the whole thing, but basically he's paraphrasing what some authors of an article have written. Martyrdom in Islam versus suicide bombing. It's an internet posting, which I understand there really is no certainty that this is even the same Nidal Hassan.
Right, and I'm sure they're going to try to link his IP address and all the computers he used to some.
You know, this Nidal
postings.
Hassan. Think about this. I mean, here is an unusual patsy. Base shootings there have been before. They've always been enlisted men. This is the first time an officer. And listen to this guy. If we were to announce on this show that we were going to have a guest who was a military trained psychiatrist, he graduated with a degree in biochemistry from Virginia Tech. He received his medical degree from the Uniformed Services University School of Medicine, later served on the faculty of the same school. He is a fellow of the Center for the Study of Traumatic Stress. He attended meetings of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Institute's Presidential Task Force. That's the transition to the White House initiative there at George Washington University. He's been awarded the National Defense Service Medal, also the Global War on Terrorism Services Medal, the Army Services Ribbon, and in addition to all these credentials, on Guy Fawkes Day, November 5th, 2009, he went berserk and killed a bunch of people in the worst mass shooting in U.S. history at a U.S. base. Now, this is weird.
On the verge of being shipped out to the country where his fellow soldiers were being traumatized by the horrors of war, and he was using seemingly advanced techniques to help ease their stress in dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder induced by the horrors of war. And in some ways, you can describe that as mind control. I mean, while all want folks who've had trauma to be able to work through it and live normal lives and not be traumatically affected by it, but the fact is, you know, we shouldn't really want them to be able to get past it and go back and, you know, be re-traumatized or re-experience the things, or in some way be lessened by how they react to the same kinds of levels of trauma.
A Center for the Study of Traumatic Stress. Boy, does that ever sound like a potential CIA mind control
kind of thing,
shop? Yeah, you know, but if these credentials are pretty impressive. And if we were to announce that we had a guest like this on this show, man, people would be saying, where did you get that guy? And they'd be thinking, he's going to be talking about mind control.
Right.
Because all of this, the treating post-traumatic stress syndrome makes the perfect cover for the Army for all kinds of meddling in the human mind. You know, it's a perfect cover. And I have to wonder, is this a created crisis? You know, redeploying these kids over and over and just driving them crazy, bringing them back and creating a problem with, post-traumatic stress syndrome with murder rates and suicide rates up and so forth. And now this, you know.
Well, it doesn't. In some ways, I think it definitely doesn't. I mean, on the one hand, I think the support the troops crowd who mindlessly, you know, wear their little yellow ribbons and crap like that. They're the ones who are going to be the most moved and incensed by this event and are going to be basically all the more ready to cry war on Islam.
And it's already,
at the same time, this is really a negative for the Army, because as much as the economy is forcing folks into serving and, immigration is being opened up in ways like never before to bolster the ranks,
And, you know, they've been able to shut down their planned, you know, mall franchised arcade shooter recruitment thingies. And because they're getting tons of recruits from the economy. But
a de facto draft.
And they've been, you know, they just, Obama just, you know, decided to go ahead with more troops. And this guy's about to deploy. And all this, you know, adds up to a pretty significant, you know, meaningfulness, I think, to most people. And that is that really this kind of event undermines the feeling of safety that, that people in the military expect. People who are thinking about joining the military expect, you know,
Military in wartime is not a very safe.
But they don't expect to be killed by their fellow officers.
By the officers. This isn't going to be great for morale.
As much as people imagine, you know, military bases as martial law institutions, they're by the folks I've known in the military, they're described more frequently as like small towns. You know, it's not like everybody's walking around, you know, carrying, you know, automatic weapons. It's like a small town, but there's levels of a security there that seem to make these things less likely, and yet here we are.
If you take this story at face value, just, you know, the that this lone nut did this, I can think of nothing that could be more emblematic of the moral rot and spiritual degradation of the entire war effort and the American empire than this kind of event. An officer whose job is to treat soldiers for post-traumatic stress syndrome going berserk. I mean, if that's really what happened, that's pretty horrible right there. But, you know, we don't know what really happened. We see the outlines of something here that looks like something's not adding up. Something's, you know, possibly being covered up. It took them several hours to figure out who was dead, you know. And you have to wonder, well, you know, maybe that was, you know, several hours that was spent trying to cobble together a good cover story, you know. But whatever, whether it was some kind of a planned psyop or an incident that got out of hand or whatever, one thing is for sure, which is that it's being played for a spot for PSYOP.
Yeah.
It's being spun.
They're always going to spin it.
And the spin that you're hearing is this Muslim infiltration, the Muslim mafia. This Jerome Corsi story from WorldNet Daily describes this fellow's attendance at this presidential transition Homeland Security meeting, okay? But it spins it. To emphasize that, you know, this is what we're talking about in this book we're selling, Muslim Mafia,
right?
Which, you know, is all about the infiltration from within.
It's the new McCarthy era,
you know, by the Muslims. Yeah, the new McCarthy era. I tell you what, if Lee Harvey Oswald was being set up for the assassination of JFK today, they wouldn't call him a communist. They would call him a Muslim, and he wouldn't be standing there in the backyard photo holding up.
He'd be holding the Quran,
they'd be looking at his internet postings. Yeah, he'd be holding the Quran, and they'd be looking at his internet postings. You know, I mean, it's a perfect way to set someone up, but you kind of get the feeling that maybe they had to set him up after the fact, that maybe something might have happened there that wasn't planned.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of alternative speculative scenarios. Just taking the data that we first heard about multiple shooters, and the fact that there's 100 rounds shot by one guy. I mean, also we know there must have been return fire. That there must have been some armed military or police personnel on site. Who, you know, some of these wounded could have been shot in the crossfire between the
friendly fire
with one or more actual shooters. But we don't know. I mean, none of this has been outlined yet. It's emerging in very specific details, like the article you were reading, where the people who probably shot him were, you know, maneuvering around a building or whatever. But I want to get back. I can't harp on this enough. It really disturbs me to see this very simple expression on this person's part, seemingly of questioning the policies of the military. Something I know it's not the military's normal processes to do; otherwise, everything would break down. But it, you know, as a human being, as an individual, part of this civilization, whether you're in the military or not, you owe it to yourself to self-reflect and to question what's going on. And it's just so simplistic what this guy was doing, and yet he's being cast as mutinous, and you can't ask those questions. And again, these internet postings were just so innocuous. My point is that it's almost as if the PSYOP could be just, yeah, we're watching you, you know, and yeah, you know, we're paying that close of attention, though it didn't help them stop something if he really did plan it.
Yeah,
but it's almost like that potential for stifling dissent by, you know, so dramatically responding mm-hmm. to this, you know, so playing up the support the troops crowd that they're so indignant and so, you know, screaming about infiltration and fomenting, you know, the very thing that this guy supposedly was wondering, whether this was a war on Islam as opposed to a war on quote unquote terror.
So. And you're already hearing talk from like Fox newscasters suggesting that maybe we need to screen Muslim soldiers more carefully and possibly also any soldiers who aren't really, you know, 100% behind the war effort. This could, you know, be a means of, you know, getting tough on dissent within the ranks.
Well, and the weird timing on November 4th, this article hit the media. 75% of potential recruits too fat, too sickly, too dumb to serve. That's another weird angle here. Is in the, you know, right before this happens, is this you know, PR coming out saying that, you know, that there is a party problem with recruiting because Americans.
They're in terrible shape, mentally and physically. Yeah, I mean, it's disgusting.
Quote, the major component of this is obesity, Kurt Gilroy, the Pentagon's director of sessions, tells Army Times William McMichael. Kids are just not able to do push-ups, and they can't do pull-ups, and they can't run. They may be really good at Call of Duty and first-person shooter video games, but
yeah,
if they're not getting at least a little exercise, they ain't going to be any good except for maybe remotely piloting all our new Air Force drones. Well,
that one right there looks like you could use him for a bomb. Yeah, just drop him out of the plane and
that picture was pretty scary.
Get out of the way.
Is that machine gun fire? Do you hear that? sounds like a phone.
Is there a mass problem shooting down the street?
Mass shooting indicates breakdown of military. This one's from Dar Jamal over at truthout.org. Truthout spoke with an Army specialist who's an active duty Iraq war veteran currently stationed at the base. The soldier spoke on condition of anonymity since the base is now on lockdown and all non-authorized military personnel on the base have been ordered not to speak to the press. Quote, a soldier entered the soldier readiness center with two handguns and opened fire. The soldier, who is currently getting treatment for traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress disorder, explained, that facility is where you go just before you deploy to Iraq or Afghanistan. But this article gets into just the breakdown of the military. And this doesn't, and my reinforces my point that this, in a lot of ways, does undermine the military. As I'm saying, it incenses that small... There, that significant base. That,
I can
that
see them picking
the
a Muslim
George
patsy.
Bush into office.
You know, a Muslim patsy would make sense for a PSYOP of some kind, but a psychiatrist?
Yeah, this whole thing is just weird from top to bottom.
Yeah.
All right, we'll be right back after these messages, and the phone lines are open, folks. Give us a call.
Yeah, give us a call.
I'm gonna get gloomy or anything. But I think there's something we need to talk about. It's about mom. Yeah. You know what I mean? I think you know what I mean.
It's the woodpecker signal, I tell you. Folks, I don't know if y'all can hear that, but there's this weird tapping on our line. Which obviously it's punny. The line is being tapped.
Yeah.
Well, now, okay, yeah, so you can give us a call at area code 512-879-3805, thanks to American Freedom Radio.
Yeah, let us know what you think about this Fort Hood shooting and the Orlando copycat aftermath.
Now, this this Orlando one, I haven't really had the chance to look into this. It seems like the more classic, you know, someone has a bad job situation and they quote unquote go postal on their old employer. And in fact, apparently there's a book called Going Postal by Mark Ames, and he's blogged over at thedailybeast.com. The office shooting in Orlando on the same day unemployment crested 10% is a deadly omen. Mark Ames on why spikes in joblessness always breed more workplace violence. Now, I would suspect that Lauren Coleman would have some difference of opinion on some of these ideas that Mark Ames has. I don't really know for sure, but he definitely covers a kind of a different angle here. Ames goes on to say in the article, in fact, America invented these going postal murders, starting with the first post office massacre in Edmonds, Oklahoma, in 1986, which led 14 dead and 6 wounded. Now, he goes into several other examples, but I wanted to get to soon workplace massacres of this sort spread all across the country. The term disgruntled employee also entered the lexicon, signifying something akin to terrorist. By the mid-1990s, even middle-class all-American schools were experiencing mass killings. Today, 10 years after Columbine, these episodes come and go with such frequency that most Americans hardly notice. They've become cable news wallpaper. Why did these killing sprees begin cropping up in the mid-1980s? When I studied these murders for my book, Going Postal, I traced the roots to Reagan-era economic policies that changed the post-war relationship between employees and companies and between the middle class and the super rich. Government regulation of business was reduced, unions were decimated, and a radical new brand of capitalism became a kind of state religion. The trouble began in the U.S. Postal Service, a major government entity suddenly subjected to market forces under President Richard Nixon. He signed a law banning strikes, opening up the USPS to private sector competition, and mandating that it become profitable by 1983. Not coincidentally, 1983 was the year of the first postal employee-on-employee shooting in South Carolina. A once comfy government job had transformed into the sort of stressful workplace that the rest of America would soon experience, too. So,
seems plausible enough.
It certainly has to be a factor, I would
bet. And I don't know if you could say there was any other kind of connection between that and the Fort Hood shootings. One of the first things I looked at was the firm. It was an architectural engineering consulting firm. Like a lot of firms, they had government contracts, aerospace and defense.
And
but you
he
know,
lost his job in 07, like a year
2 years
and a half
ago. Yeah. But this copycat effect is very real.
Yes.
And it reverberates for a while after these incidents occur. And this was a particularly big one, this Army base. But, you know, there's one other thing about this, getting back to the Fort Hood and Hassan, is this, his being a fellow for the Center for the Study of Traumatic Stress, which mm-hmm. as we were discussing, sounds like the perfect mind control shop. What you have to wonder is what kind of treatment was he giving the soldiers? What kind of treatments were they at the Center for the Study of Traumatic Stress coming up with?
Yeah,
I
didn't post the link. I didn't post the link, but I sent you that Sorcha Fall.
Yeah,
and I we've this is one of those independent writers.
Can it be credited or not? We don't know.
It's like it's filled with lots of verifiable facts, and then
but,
there's this couple of pieces in there that's like, what the hell? Where did they get that from? And
but given the history of the CIA and military intelligence
with
this kind of outrageous experimentation on people with LSD and all kinds of drugs. And LSD was just one of many of an arsenal of drugs that they came up with.
It must be remembered that the MKUltra stuff didn't just deal with the idea of creating Manchurian candidate mind control slaves. It also had to do with breaking people and getting the truth out of them, torturing them for information
and also for
intel.
Controlling the minds of soldiers.
Yeah. all of these things dovetail into you know, the various things that we've seen unfold in the War on Terror. In fact, this new movie, The Men Who Stare at Goats, based on the book The Men Who Stare at Goats, is making a laughingstock of some of the serious parapsychological research that was done by the military for operational uses, but which also, it's like, it's the sheen of ridicule is you know, lacing it's this movie as a way of easily distracting from the hardcore dark outcomes of that research, which led into the abuses we saw at Abu Ghraib.
It's only the tip of the iceberg, this story. Yeah. Well, at the Center for the Study of Traumatic Stress, one thing I know that they haven't probably been doing is coming up with ideas like this to help soldiers with PTSD. We have this story. A Israeli study has discovered that marijuana can prove helpful for post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, I'm not surprised at all.
And
seems to help my stress every day. I'm well, you know, never mind that.
Maybe it doesn't make good soldiers, though. I mean, it tends to kind of create a peaceful feeling in people, and you know, they don't feel like fighting,
right?
As a general rule,
right? You know,
briefly,
in other drug war news, Breckenridge, Colorado voters legalized marijuana paraphernalia.
Yes, that's good news. There,
it's reported over at rawstory.com. So there was this other bit here. Oh yeah, we were talking about Guy Fawkes Day, and there's this article over at trueslant.com. Guy Fawkes protesters finally celebrate the right way. And it's an interesting little article on the traditional celebrations associated with Guy Fawkes Day. So let's see. After the whole thing, Londoners were encouraged to mock Fawkes, probably because the thought of a lone goon getting that close to assassinating royals spooked the hell out of the oligarchy. Thus, the popular contemporary verse was born. Remember, remember, the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. In modern times, it became tradition for children to burn effigies of Fawkes as part of the bonfire night celebration. He has a complicated legacy, part mocked, part celebrated. Fawkes has sort of become history's clown, the man who took on impossible odds, accomplished nothing, and died a pointless death. Though no king has disseminated orders, he's still burned in effigy today, yet he's also a beloved symbol of anarchist resistance. Fawkes was ranked 30th in the 2002 list of Britons by the public, and it looks like we lost our signal there. And hopefully this will reconnect with our FU radio. Oh, I mean, our American Freedom Radio comrades.
Are we having a blackout?
We've had a little media blackout there.
That's so powerful. It can even purify untreated water.
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you now.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there, but I just went to a commercial right away.
Okay. Welcome back. This is PsyOp Radio, live from Austin, Texas, and I'm Smiles Lewis.
And I'm Mac White.
And, the tapping's back. We got disconnected there, but...
We blacked out.
But our recording of it will have at least the tail end of...
You were talking about Guy Fawkes.
Yeah, TrueSlant.com has this article by Allison Kilkenny. Guy Fawkes protesters finally celebrate the right way. And it was just talking about the various ways, you know, that Guy Fawkes has been both vilified but also celebrated. He has a complicated legacy, part mocked, part celebrated. Fawkes has sort of become history's clown, the man who took on impossible odds, accomplished nothing, and died a pointless death. Though no king has disseminated orders, he's still burned in effigy today. He's also a beloved symbol of anarchist resistance. Fawkes was ranked 30th in the 2002 list of the BBC's 100 Greatest Britons by the public. Rivers, parks, and islands are named after him. Even as people mock Fox, they seem to love him, and this year, protesters finally understand the spirit of Guy Fawkes Day. Though this group still decided to burn an effigy, they aimed their anger at the ruling class. Hmm. Quote, protesters calling for parliamentary reform in the wake of the MP's expenses scandal are using Guy Fawkes Day today to float an effigy of the up the Thames to the House of Parliament. The campaigners are setting off from an East London wharf, pulling a 10-foot-high duck house to dock at the Palace of Westminster, while they claim MPs are busy plotting to overturn Sir Christopher Kelly's recommendations on claiming for mortgages and employing relatives. The Vote for a Change campaign is calling for a referendum to bring accountability to Parliament. A quest for accountability act really was the root of Fawkes' plot. Admittedly, he picked the crudest, most violent means to express his disdain for the governing principles of the royals. However, a suppressed people who feel they lack representation in their government usually lash out in uncivilized ways. Human beings can only be beaten, mistreated, and marginalized for so long before they snap. As Stephen Addison wrote on the Reuters blog, should it not now be conceded that Fox might have had a point, even if his methods were a little extreme? Oh, I'm sure that now American press are going to call this guy a Muslim extremist for suggesting such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
The oligarchy is misbehaving once again, corrupt, overfed, and cruel to their constituents who are poorer, sicker, and angrier than ever. The residents of the houses of power should not raise their brows in surprise when a flaming effigy floats by them. It's just a sign that the people finally recognize the true villains of history, and it's not some dead dude who wore a funny hat.
Hmm.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Police state. Take a drink.
Yes. Down the hatch. And down with the police state.
So, quickly, this week before the events of Thursday, I was looking forward to spending some relaxing times drinking mead and whatnot at the Texas Renaissance Festival. And in fact, despite a brief moment of panic when we thought we'd lost our tickets, which we got from a friend who had gotten them for free, it turned out we found the tickets and all four of us were able to make the trek to that little town several hours outside of Austin. And I say little town, it's a huge Renaissance village with thousands and thousands of people. It's crazy, and we camped, and it was great.
Sounds fun.
We'll be right back.
Beckley Avenue.
Beckley Avenue.
Okay. Yeah.
I think there's some JFK news here buried down, right? Yeah.
Yes, there is.
FBI records, late senator linked to Klan. There's a JFK connection there. I haven't had the chance to digest that. Here's another one. JFK-online.com. Jerry P. Shinley Archive. Guy Bannister, Senator James Eastland, and the 56 SISS hearings, JFK assassination investigation, Jim Garrison, New Orleans investigation of John F. Kennedy assassination. Haven't had the chance to, been so freaking busy. This other one, new details about the transfer of power related to the JFK assassination. And of course the thing that you covered, in last week's show, they're going to get us all. It's
Lyndon
a plot.
Johnson hiding in the bathroom on Air Force One before they took off for Washington, saying it's a plot. They're going to kill us all.
Yeah. But, those links you can find over at PSIOPradio.com. And we're fast approaching the, another big anniversary of the coup here in America with the JFK assassination.
Yes, 2 weeks from tonight, we'll have a special JFK show that will be November 22nd, 2009.
And before the break, I was alluding to our little police state drinking game and taser report.
Yes, we haven't had a taser report in a while. I thought maybe that, you know, that kind of activity had reached a lull, but no, it's back.
Yeah, there was a slew of ones that caught my attention. On the third, police used taser on Kent resident man tased while his Crane Avenue home burns. Police used a taser gun to restrain a resident outside of his home on Crane Avenue as it burned at about 4:30 a.m. Sunday. The resident, Mike Bartlett, said he was returning from downtown for his cell phone when he noticed his sister's room on fire. He ran in to make sure she was not there and continued to fight to find his friends in the basement and alert them of the fire. He said his cousin's girlfriend was sleeping upstairs, so he went back in the house to retrieve her. As I was running downstairs, I could hear the window glass popping because of the heat, Bartlett said. When he went, got outside, Bartlett said police officers were at the end of the driveway. He said they approached them for help, but they dismissed him as he walked toward one of his friends. He said the officers tackled and restrained him with the taser gun, giving them no reason for their force. According to Kent City Police, levels of resistance report, Bartlett used psychological and physical active resistance to avoid arrest. The report stated he was both combative and intoxicated. No one from the police department was available for comment. Goes on a little bit more, but you've heard these stories about people being restrained from performing heroics or helping out when their house is on fire. And granted, they're not the professionals, and they might be acting emotionally and not in a way that is perhaps the most logical. But by damned, sometimes emotional decisions and actions have to be made and are the best actions to take.
But don't we have another? This is it right here. Suspect surrenders, puts hands on squad car, then gets tased in the neck. This is the second time it's happened that I know of. There was the case in Austin a couple of years ago. A guy told by the cop to get out of the car. He gets out of the car and he gets tased. Well, here's a story in Minneapolis. A Minneapolis man who was tased by police after surrendering and putting both hands on the hood of a squad car says he wants restitution from the police. On Monday, Rolando Ruiz's lawyer released dash cam video of an April 30th incident in which Ruiz can be seen with his hands on the hood of a car when a police officer approaches him and tases him in the neck. Well, anyway, I thought the whole idea was to get you to comply, but if you comply, you get tased anyway. Yeah. Where's the motivation to comply? The motivation is to run if you can. That's really scary.
Then there's this other one I think you sent me. 81-year-old tasered by Yellison Air Force Base Police, Fairbanks. An 81-year-old man was tasered during a traffic stop last week. It is the second time since 1998 that police have had to make a show of force during a traffic stop to arrest Glenn M. Wilcox, a Fairbanks-based Episcopalian priest and real estate agent.
Oh, he sounds like a real danger.
Yeah. Court documents allege that officers with Ellison Air Force Base's 354th Security Forces Squadron pulled Wilcox over just after 1 p.m. Wednesday for going 11 miles over the speed limit on the Richardson Highway. An officer identified as a senior airman in court documents took Wilcox's license, registration, and proof of insurance and wrote him a traffic citation. When he returned to Wilcox's car, Wilcox refused to accept the documents and sped down the highway, according to a criminal complaint filed in court. Wilcox disputes that version of events. They waved to me, and I thought that meant I could go on, said Wilcox. They stopped me again and told me to get out of my car. Alaska State Troopers were notified of the incident, and the 354th initiated a high-risk traffic stop near blah, blah, blah.
Once again, an elderly person tased in complete violation of the Taser International Corporation's own recommendations on the use of a taser.
It's weird. Apparently, he was told to put his hands behind his back, something he claims is physically impossible for him to do. I showed them I could barely touch my fingertips as they insisted. Yeah. This other one, though, that I had come across is in some ways even more disturbing. I'd seen this fellow's name in libertarian Ron Paul circles for some time. I'd even heard that he was a very open-minded, intelligent 9/11 skeptic in the best sense of the words. And this news announcement I heard that basically he'd been shot and tased at a traffic stop just blows my mind. the libertarian news outlet, Independent Political Report.com, reported former Nevada LP state chair shot by police is in critical condition. On October 30th, Jim Dwinzing, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correct, who was chairman of the Nevada Libertarian Party until March 2009, was shot by a Las Vegas policeman after the police had stopped Dwinzing for making an illegal turn and some illegal lane changes. According to this newspaper story, he was in a rental car and he bolted and ran away from the police. He is still alive but is in critical condition. Dwinzing was also a Libertarian nominee for U.S. House last year. Now, he, on that page, posted his, as I understand, his first public statement about what he says happened. And he says, first, I'd like to thank everyone for their prayers and well wishes. I have suffered a broken arm. It is currently pinned in four places. Additional surgery on it will probably take place on Wednesday. The shots to my midsection missed all vital organs. Three shots were fired from behind me and to my right. The doctors believe that two of the shots made contact. It appears that one entered my right pec, bounced off my sternum, went through my left pec, then shattered my humerus just above my left elbow. The second shot went into my lower right abdomen and exited my left abdomen without hitting any vital organs. Thank goodness for him. I am well on the way to recovery and expect to be released from the hospital shortly after my surgery on Wednesday. I am disappointed that the CCLP issued a press release without having spoken to me first. As a result, it contains misstatements of fact. Here is what happened. I was pulled over for driving straight through an intersection in a right turn only lane. I did signal for my lane changes to the left. After exiting the vehicle at the officer's request, I was standing with my back to the vehicle. The car's open door was to my right. My hands were raised above my head. I was calmly speaking to the cop, attempting to talk my way out of being taken to jail over an unpaid high occupancy vehicle ticket. With my hands raised above my head, the cop shot me with a taser in the chest. As I have had heart problems since my premature birth, I believe a taser to be a lethal weapon, and we know that they can be.
Yes.
Several people without heart conditions have been killed by this weapon. When the taser began electrocuting me, instinct took over. I have been shocked by standard 120-volt electricity, which is what is used in your home. That was bad enough. Metro's tasers contain, quote, 50,000 volts of pain compliance, according to one of the cops at the family law court who was operating the checkpoint. Let me tell you, it is quite painful. I immediately turned to my left and began moving away from the source of the electrocution. By the time I got to the back of the vehicle, I had reached up with both hands, grabbed the electrodes, and pulled them away from my chest. The juice then flowed through my arms, not my heart. As I lay here in my hospital bed, I firmly believe this instinct saved my life. I continued running away from the taser. I heard the cop fire it again, but did not feel an additional shock. I was running down the sidewalk with empty hands. I heard three pops from behind me. At first, I thought it was another taser shot. Then I saw my left arm dangling. I was taken down by a second officer who was nearby conducting a separate, unrelated traffic stop. He had me lying face down on my broken arm. It was at this point that he found my licensed and registered pistol in my right cargo pants pocket and my Emerson folding knife in my right front pocket. Let me reiterate, I am a firearms instructor at the world's largest firearms training facility. I always carry a gun and at least one knife. I never pulled either of these items out of my pockets. The shooter was on my right side and from his perspective had to have been able to see that my right hand was indeed empty. The officer that I was running toward never reached for any weapon. I'd like to publicly thank the trauma surgeons at the UMC Medical Facility. They did an excellent job. The reason additional surgery on my arm is necessary is because the wounds to my chest took priority. For good reason. They worry first about life, then about limb. Again, thanks to everybody, yada, yada, yada. He's saying, I still haven't heard from the CCLP, the Libertarian Party, or the NVLP chairs. To my knowledge, the CCLP had not issued a press release in years. I'm not sure why it felt compelled to issue one in this instance, which contained misstatements of fact and which clearly tried to distance the CCLP from one of its members. Although not an officer, I am a voting member of the CCLP XCOM. Needless to say, my editing advice was not sought on the press release before it was issued. Incidentally, I was returning from a trip to Carson City following the Teabagger Express in support of my 2010 Senate campaign to unseat the senator from Searchlight. And his campaign website is hellforharry.com.
You think this was a setup?
I don't know. I mean, I could easily see it just things getting out of hand.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like at first, and then you hear about all this.
But, you know, we've reported with these new, training programs for local law enforcement where they're trained to look for possible quote-unquote terrorists, and they're now tied into these databases where they're giving ratings for people. Yeah. He could very well have popped up on a list because he's been at anti-war rallies or some such.
I don't know, but one thing we know, they're tasing 81-year-old men and 73-year-old women. And
to be tased and shot over a traffic ticket.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, granted, yes, he was running, but he was not a threat to anybody.
Yeah, they usually aren't.
But see, you know, perhaps the guy ran his ID and saw that he had a concealed carry permit. You know, maybe that was all that was needed to make him on edge. But I suspect, you know, I bet he's on a terror watch list as a subversive because of his political leanings.
It wouldn't surprise
me. And it could easily
the cop got spooked
and was just, you know, that much more trigger happy.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
well, we know that these incidents happen too often, and you know that police brutality seems to be epidemic in this country. You just hear terrible things. And I wonder if it will eventually reach the point where we can all expect to be tasered once in a while.
I goddamn well hope not.
I mean, seriously. Or at least, you know, get to the point to where you know somebody that's been tasered, and then eventually, you know, you get tasered, and, you know, my first tasering, I remember it well, you know.
I certainly remember, you know, the first times I've heard about, you know, folks who have been tasered.
Oh, it sounds terrible, yeah. Well,
on a another darker note, this is just a weird little I'm going to just throw this out there, and I posted at Rigorous Intuition forums about this. It seemed like there's been an uptick in local news stories about child porn busts, and apparently this may be an actual situation where the federal government has actually succeeded in a campaign against pedophilia and child pornography. Apparently starting in last year, there's been a real big push and a lot more money going into the FBI and other law enforcement looking into this. But what I noticed was just in the last few weeks, there's been several local Central Texas stories about teachers getting busted.
Yeah.
And I just there was a student over at ACC. He left his thumb drive, his little USB flash drive behind. And trying to figure out whose it was, they looked at it and found all this child pornography, and I think he even maybe came looking for it, but they definitely knew it was his, and bam, he's now in jail. But then there's this other guy that I saw the video footage of, and this is – I'm looking at the forum post, and there's a picture of it there. But I started Googling and scroogling and found a whole host of articles from around the country about this sort of thing, and there definitely seems to be an uptick in this, which I totally support. I mean, I do worry that perhaps as some have speculated, that these are just low-level perps getting busted. And that the real criminals are usually the political folks who are already
the Franklin cover up types.
They're who are getting already getting favors done, and they're doing favors for others to keep the potential for them being blackmailed for the things that they've done.
And you always hear about these consumers of child pornography being arrested, but do you ever hear anything about the producers of it?
No, and so much of it
supposedly. Has anyone cracked a child porn ring yet that really amounted to anything?
Some of these recent busts have been in the hundreds of people. But
I mean the actual.
But the producers,
how did they manage to evade?
The distributors they're getting hit. You know, some of these folks that are doing internet stuff. But again, it depends on where those servers are. If they're in the United States, you know.
I understand a lot of it is produced overseas, but it has to be distributed here somehow. And can't you? I mean, if they're really serious about going after this problem, then why not put the United Nations to work on some big initiative to really do something about this and human trafficking? But it's just these lower level guys, like you mentioned, that seem to. It's like every month there are a few. headlines. If it's not a teacher, it's a fire official or something, some county official who gets found on their computer, which always makes me wonder, maybe somebody had it in for them. I mean, what's to prevent something like that?
How many frame-ups could be going on?
Yeah,
all that internet spam that you get, all that porno internet spam, man. It's like, to me, that I've always speculated that could easily be like the CIA's way of, well, we know anybody that we go after is going to have pornography on their computer because mm-hmm. we're spamming everybody in the country with illegal potential spam. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this the guy that I saw them take down on video is this former Katy school teacher arrested for online porn charges. Stephen Wayne Sudeth, 34, of Sealy, was indicted on 30 counts of possessing kiddie porn and 10 counts of promotion of child pornography. And he was part of the Katy school system that's just outside of Houston. And then there's this other one from the Statesman, teacher hired by Kyle's school indicted on child porn charges. I'm glad again to hear that there could in fact be some uptick in this kind of news story, but there's a new book out on this subject, and maybe we can read that and get to the writer researcher on about that, and we'll be back after these messages.
They say he shot the president, but I don't think he did.
All right. Thanks for joining us. This is PSYOP Radio, live from Austin, Texas. I'm Smiles Lewis.
And I'm Mac White.
And that number, if you want to give us a call, last half hour, folks, area code 512-879-3805. That's 512-879-3805. And, okay, well, UFOs... Well, someone of great significance has died yet again in the field of ufology. Now, this person wasn't a UFO researcher. He was the aging witness to a very, very famous close encounter UFO landing case called the Socorro, New Mexico case, involving the witness, policeman Lonnie Zamora. And Lonnie just passed away this past week, and he's going to be sorely missed. The case over the last couple of years has become re-energized with controversy because a certain group of upstart UFO bloggers have claimed that the famous case was nothing but a misidentification of a prank involving some sort of balloon and or advanced aircraft that shot a flame out in like a hot air balloon might do, except the flame is going up into the balloon in those cases. Now, it's kind of sad that in the midst of that renewed controversy, he would pass away. One of the main investigators, besides Dr. J. Allen Hynek, the famous inventor of the close encounter of the first, second, and third kind scale, another famous UFO researcher who's famous in very different ways, whom I respect for a variety of reasons, but also recognizes being kind of a very different character in the UFO historical scene, and that is Ray Stanford. Ray wrote a book called A Socorro Saucer in a Pentagon Pantry, and he was one of the first UFO researchers on site to investigate this very famous case back in 1964. And in a nutshell, the case involved Lonnie chasing a speeding car and seeing something off in a field where he knew there was a dynamite shack, like for mining, where they stored dynamite, and he saw a glint or something that got his attention, and he raced over. He broke off pursuit of the speeder in favor of investigating a potential explosive situation.
And that's where he pulled up, and through the senses of his eyes, which I believe he had his glasses on, witnessed what he described as an egg-shaped craft on three metal legs, with two short beings in white coveralls who were moving around the outside of the craft, and who apparently, upon seeing him, quickly went into the craft, and he started hearing a loud roaring sound and saw flame shooting out, and ducked and covered because he was convinced that this could set off a potential explosion, because he was still thinking about this nearby dynamite shack. And this thing took off, I believe, went straight up and then shot off in a certain direction. And apparently there were other there was kind of a mini flap of UFO sightings in and around
the area. Egg-shaped ones like that?
Well, of just other UFO sightings, but there's not much known about them, because after the Air Force sent out J. Allen Hynek of Project Blue Book to investigate this case, they basically, you know, they actually conceded that it was an unknown. And but they didn't continue investigating any other cases in the area. Now,
And then recent allegations that it was a balloon or some kind of a hoax, is that what they were?
Now there are these bloggers who are claiming that there was a prank society from a nearby university that has secretly kept hidden the fact that they were responsible for this. Now, here is this is kind of long. I don't know if I can read the whole thing, but Ray Stanford has written a eulogy for Lonnie Zamora, 1933 to 2009. Eulogy to a man of his word and the finest witness one could ever interview. By Ray Stanford, author of the 211-page book on the Socorro case. On Monday night, November 2nd, 2009, Lonnie Zamora, likely North America's most highly respected witness to something that the U.S. Air Force's chief scientific investigator of UFOs eventually admitted was, to use his own term, a, quote, close encounter of the third time, died of what a Socorro police spokesman described as a heart attack. The April 24th, 1964, 5:50 to 5:53 p.m. Socorro, New Mexico case of a well-documented multi-witness UFO landing is so well known that it need not be described in any great detail here. Instead, our focus is upon the quality and character of Lonnie Zamora, at the time a Socorro policeman who reluctantly became the central and closest witness to the landing of, occupants of, takeoff and high-speed departure of, an 18-foot UFO shaped like an elongated egg. After the encounter, Zamora's ability as an accurate and careful observer was attested to by the famous meteor tracker Dr. Lincoln LaPaz, because of the extraordinary accuracy of meteor trail coordinate data Zamora had earlier provided him in helping search for a fallen meteorite. This fellow they're mentioning, Dr. LaPaz, features in some accounts of connections to the Roswell incident. But continuing, before April 24th, 1964, policeman Zamora would have laughed at the suggestion that UFOs are anything about which a sensible person should be concerned, when he had seen a brilliant flame in the sky and then the whitish elongated object with two figures no larger than 10-year-old boys in what looked like white coveralls beside it. Zamora didn't think, wow, a UFO with humans beside it. Absolutely not. He thought, at first, sight of the flame of a nearby dynamite shack blowing up, and upon first sight of the landed UFO and occupants, that a car or van might have rolled or tumbled down into the ravine bottom, and that the two, well, under 5 feet tall bipedal figures in the white might be children, perhaps escaped from what he had taken to be a car in the ravine bottom. Such was the character of the policeman, concerned for safety and certainly not about turning anything he saw into a UFO and occupants. Until less than 2 minutes later, the UFOs were absolutely not a part of Lonnie Zamora's worldview. Well, most readers know the rest of the story, but in remembering Lonnie Zamora, let's have a brief look into a personal moment of his family life as a window into understanding the man. Well, I won't take up more time, but this is a really nice eulogy by someone who had the chance to interview him and investigate the case right afterwards. A fantastically interesting and entertaining book called A Pentagon Saucer.
Eggs from Outer Space. That'd be a good title.
I know actually Lauren Coleman did blog about Zamora's passing away, and
of course, he was talking a little bit about the name game and that sort of thing and synchronicities. He said, the name Zamora in Spanish means from Zamora. The name in Hebrew is translated into English as praised. He has a picture of El Cid, I guess, that famous movie.
Yeah.
Zamora is a city in Castile and León, Spain, the capital of the province of Zamora. It lies on a rocky hill in the northwest near the frontier with Portugal and crossed by the Duero River, which is some 30 miles downstream as it reaches the Portuguese frontier. Now, I did also want to comment. I'm skipping over what he goes on to say there, but he mentions it in the context of this movie that's out right now, The Fourth Kind. There are four kinds of alien encounters. The fourth kind is abduction. Well, the ad campaign for this, based on the actual case studies, is complete garbage. Coleman notes, finally, is to be noted that the movie The Fourth Kind opens on Friday, November 6th. It is a science fiction thriller horror film directed by Olatunde Osunsami and starring Mia Jovovich. The film is purported to be a documentary reenactment set in Nome, Alaska, and deals with alien abductions. The film's promotional materials say the title is derived from Dale Hynek's classification system of close encounters with aliens, in which The Fourth Kind denotes an alien abduction. And thankfully, he revised this article when he originally said that he's reworded that now to say that the promotional materials say this, because it is in fact a lie and a misrepresentation of J. Allen Hynek's classification system. He goes on to say, as researcher S. Miles Lewis points out in Personal Correspondence, this is technically incorrect. A close encounter of the fourth kind is said to be when a, quote, human is abducted by UFO or its occupants, unquote. But this type was not included in Hynek's original close encounter scale. Jacques Vallée, Hynek's associate, argued in, quote, physical analysis in 10 cases of unexplained aerial objects with material samples, that a CE4 should be described as, quote, cases when witnesses experienced a transformation of their sense of reality, so as to also include non-abduction cases where absurd, hallucinatory, or dreamlike events are associated with UFO encounters. And actually, that probably describes some of the horrific, crazy, you know, haunting-esque, you know, exorcism, possession-style stuff that seems to be in this new film.
Hmm.
Of course, Lonnie Zamora had encounters of the first, second, and third kind, but it just really irks me, and I'm glad that Lauren made that distinction there after I pointed that out to him, that this film that's, you know, trying to capitalize on kind of the whole Blair Witch thing is billing itself as if it's using the name inspired by J. Allen Hynek. They don't actually say J. Allen Hynek, but they say, you know, the system was created in the 70s, and they describe the first, second, and third contacts, and then they mention the fourth kind, but that's just wrong. It's a lie. It's a misrepresentation of the facts, and it's just to get you into a scary movie that probably has little or nothing to do with UFOs and more to do with just a scary movie about possession.
Showbiz.
Yeah, there's that man. We got to figure out what that tapping sound is.
The woodpecker, and we don't mean Woody woodpecker. We mean that Russian woodpecker, the kind of a mind control thing.
There. Yeah. Whoa. Well, speaking of mind control, before we go to the break, I want to at least start talking about this stuff that I said was big news. This is big news, folks. I was really shocked to learn about these new experiments being described. Both were in the British papers, the Mail Online and the Times Online. Psychic mind reading computer will show your thoughts on screen. That's one headline. Psychic computer shows your thoughts on screen. They're both describing these experiments where they've hooked up a technology that we've talked about repeatedly on this show over the last several years. And that is fMRI, functional magnetic resonance imaging, where they can create brain maps and monitor the activity in your brain better than they ever have been able to before. And we've talked about how, you know, this technology is being billed as the new lie detector, and how they can show an image to you and they can tell from just the unconscious brain reaction you have they can tell whether you've seen that.
If you recognize it.
And this is already being applied to court cases in India where some woman has been convicted. Of poisoning somebody based on this technology. And meanwhile, that's what these articles about. But what's new to me here is, and this gets to, as I I was saying earlier, your Dreamograph technology.
Yeah, kind of someone stolen my idea.
Well, it's the kind of technology that we've seen in films like Brainstorm and other fantastic films like Until the End of the World and Strange Days. This idea of being able to record human sense impressions so that others can play them back and re-experience them, both in terms of waking life and as well as your sleeping life. Now, this technology is it, folks. Go and read these articles and think about the implications here. And it goes beyond what my dream has always been, which is to be able to create a dream recorder.
As you have, Mac.
Yes.
And, you know, one that would be able to be shared with other people, that you could see the visuals and feel the all the emotional, historic content and replete within every image and every sound and touch that you experience in a dream. I mean, these are synesthetic, psychedelic experiences your dreams can be. And
this would be an entirely new medium, I believe. It might be, if such a thing actually comes to existence, like the film Brainstorm, where you put on a helmet and you see all what the individual whose their sensory impressions and so forth were recorded, you know.
And perhaps even live. Perhaps you could have clairvoyance where you experience somebody else's senses remotely. But this technology, basically they've done fMRI scans of people's brains as they were watching certain videos, and then they would show them a new video and they have the computer take the brain scans and look for patterns and recreate the image. In other words, take your sense impressions and record them so that they could be played back for somebody else. And if the graphics in these articles are actual and real representations of this, it's gotten pretty advanced. Now, posting this information online, I found some folks that said, "Oh yeah, didn't you see that article about and that video about this? You know, they've been doing this with cats." And I was like, "What?" And yes, folks, they've had this hooked up to cats and actually been able to show what a cat is seeing.
The world through a cat's eyes.
We'll be back with more information after these messages. Back. This is Smiles Lewis
and Mac White,
and this is the final segment of PsyOp Radio live tonight. Thank you for tuning in, and man, there's just tons of news links over at PsyOp Radio that you can go and link through and find plenty to read about your world. Both important news and maybe some that's not so important, but always interesting, I hope. Conspiracy researcher, deep parapolitical researcher Mike Rupert has now been interviewed in the Wall Street Journal, folks. They do make, you know, some kind of, you know, glancing, ridiculing comments about, you know, referencing his being a conspiracy theorist or whatever. But what do you think they've got him to talk about there, of course? But energy news, you know, the whole peak oil issue. Sounding an alarm on oil, independent journalist Mike Rupert predicted the global recession. Now he's foreseeing an imminent energy crisis. But this is wild, man. I mean, this guy has gone from, you know, confronting DEA about, you know, CIA dealing crack cocaine to, of course, all his, you know, deep parapolitical analysis of everything, including 9/11, lots of economic analysis, and, you know, whether you agree or disagree, he's, you know, been pushing hard this peak oil idea. And surprise, surprise, the Wall Street Journal is there to look into this. But of course, he must have gotten their attention with his stuff on economic analysis. But There's some other interesting news articles under the parapolitical PSYOP news section of PSYOPradio.com. U.S. needs hit squads, manhunting agency. That's
from, I thought we already had that.
Yeah, right. U.S. needs hit squads, special ops report. This is coming out of the Danger Room, of course, over at
Wired.com. Who says we need that?
Some other really interesting stuff. Man, the stuff with the internet, net neutrality stuff is really scary. I think folks should look into that and do what your conscience tells you to do, because that is how we're getting all this information out to you. And if we lose that, we lose a lot.
And there are efforts underway to end the internet as we know it.
Let's see. What else we got? Down in 9/11 news, there's a really great audio interview with a full transcript of a friend, Scott Horton, interviewing FBI whistleblower Sybil Edmonds and John M. Cole, and he interviewed them on October 23rd. Now, of course, Sybil Edmonds is finally breaking her silence on what she witnessed as a FBI translator. Leading up to 9/11 and after, and that transcript is very valuable information. FBI whistleblower names: Scott Horton interviews Sybil Edmonds and John M. Cole. There's a couple other 9/11 news articles there, and of course you've got over on the lefty side under our health scare section, Kucinich health reform legislation, a bailout for insurance companies. Well, no,
yeah.
No shit, Sherlock. Yeah. Something I've been hearing about for a long time is that, how our Congress is violating its own laws in relationship to the fact that we support Israel when they've not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty.
Yeah.
And we're giving them aid despite that. Mm-hmm. And I recently learned about this, I went on a little trawling mission, and I posted the links over there at the site, again, at the bottom of this this week's edition, including a whole bunch of links about the Goldstone Report, which you're not hearing about in mainstream American news sources other than, say, maybe Washington Post and the Christian Science Monitor, and surprisingly enough, Google, but I don't think it's making it out to mainstream TV outlets and such, that basically this United Nations, this Goldstone report has come out saying that both the Palestinians and the Israelis committed war crimes and should be brought up on charges related to last year's Gaza attacks. But it really comes down hard on Israel, supposedly. And Israel is basically saying, of course, don't United States don't recognize this. United Nations don't recognize this. But again, this whole Symington amendment that's older than I was aware of, that prevents this foreign funding. This very interesting stuff, and it's like, gosh, why can't we get why can't we get the Congress to be held accountable for this kind of criminal activity? And I posted some links to Israeli nuclear arsenal prohibits U.S. foreign aid under Symington Amendment. That's Symington Amendment. And apparently this was this amendment was amended by the astronaut John Glenn. And it's, called the Glenn Amendment prohibits U.S. foreign assistance to Israel.
Uh-huh.
There's a Israeli watch website, IRMEP.org. I forget what that's an acronym for, but they have a lot of the information about what I'm talking about here. Glenn Amendment prohibits U.S. foreign assistance to Israel. As Congress debates foreign aid legislation, it's time to remember nuclear non-proliferation restrictions on U.S. taxpayer-funded expenditures. Former astronaut and Senator John Glenn amended aid legislation in 1977. Since then, the U.S. may not provide civilian or military aid to any foreign country trafficking nuclear technology outside the International Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty safeguards. Recent confirmations by U.S. officials that Israel is a nuclear weapons state mean that unless President Barack Obama signs a special waiver to the Speaker of the House and Senate Foreign Relations Committee, no U.S. foreign aid may legally be delivered to Israel in 2010. And we've got links to that. Well, thanks for joining us, folks. This has been PsyOp Radio. I'm Smiles Lewis.
And I'm Mac White.
And you can go to PsyOp Radio, PSIOPradio.com for all the podcast archives, and MACKWHITE.com for all Mac White information.
Yes.
And links to his blog. Thanks for tuning in.
Good night. It's a right to remind.